Welcome to Season 10 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. I am excited you're here because we're covering a topic that means and it matters so much. Getting outside of our comfort zones. I just saw this week a quote from Gary Vaynerchuk, and he said, "There is such an incredible conversation waiting to happen around breaking outside of your comfort zone and breaking down the barriers that are holding you back. So many of you have drawn a line in the sand as to what you can and cannot do. But the truth is, you don't really know. You haven't tasted the berries. You haven't had the experience." And when I read that quote, I thought, what an incredible opportunity it was for me and now you to get to learn from this week's guest, Andy Molenski, literally the person who wrote the book about getting outside your comfort zone. And I cannot wait for you to hear from him and not only learn from him as to why it's important to get outside your comfort zone, but how you can do it more. Take, for example, this podcast. Even though I'm an extrovert, starting anything, particularly something that you don't have any experience doing before, it's just a daunting task. Without this podcast, without stepping outside of my comfort zone, I would never have had the opportunity to either meet or enter your life, our listeners. And I certainly would never have had the opportunity to learn from so many great leaders over 10 seasons of the podcast. So I hope that this show makes an impact on your life and it gets you to take one chance to step outside your comfort zone one more time than you're doing today. Just a quick moment from our sponsors. When change is the only constant, people and businesses must be built to adapt. Follow My Lead is brought to you by That Moment, a new podcast from Pivotal about the pivot that changes everything. Sometimes we recognize the need to seize the moment and change course. Other times we have no choice but to pivot. During these rapidly changing times, pivots can bring uncertainty, fear, and the looming possibility of failure. But it also can open doors for discovery, growth, and change. In each episode of That Moment, business leaders and entrepreneurs share their stories of taking risks and finding success at work and in life. In the latest episode of That Moment, a race car driver tells his story of racing towards the Indy 500 only to veer terribly off course, and then how his accident helped him find a new track as an entrepreneur. Followed by a conversation with Carol Jewell, an executive leader in technology, who talks about the need for diversity in technology and how her choice not to take an AP class changed her life and fate of a Fortune 500 company forever. Listen now wherever you find your podcasts. Well, Andy, thanks for being on the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, there's a good chance that you're the smartest person we have ever had on the show. I mean,
I don't know about that.
Brown, Columbia, Harvard, and now a professor. I mean, we've got a lot of smart people, but I have to say you probably are the smartest.
I don't know if I'm the smartest. I've probably gone to the, you know, I've probably paid the most in tuition. How about that?
Before we get into reach, which I really want to do because I'm fascinated by it, I want to talk about the transition that you're seeing from students where you teach to the real world. What are some of the things that you're seeing in students today that you are trying to teach them outside of just the material or the content in your classroom to get them prepared for the real world?
It's a really good question, and it's actually, I think it's on the cutting edge of what a lot of universities are trying to do, actually. So I actually just got named the head of a global leadership institute here at Brandeis, and our mission is going to be doing exactly what you're talking about, preparing younger people to, like, I don't know, from the dorm room to the boardroom.
Right.
I mean, not quite the dorm room to the boardroom, but you know what I mean. I think the life, and I'm actually starting a pretty significant research project this year on that exact topic, so stay tuned. and maybe we'll talk again. But, you know, I think there's a lot of challenges, if you think about it, in terms of just the culture and the life of a student when you're transitioning to the real world. I mean, a couple of them that pop into my mind immediately just as we're talking is just, you know, for example, structure. You know, your life is structured in a university. Your time is structured. The expectations are structured and kind of given to you. Even in a class, you know, when we use the case method in business school, you're given the case, you're given the data, and your job is to kind of attack and analyze the data. In the real world, you're not like given the data in a case study. You're not given a 12, like you start a company or something, you're not given a 12-page, you know, document saying, okay, here's your competition, here are their numbers, here are the other potential competitors, you know what I mean? So sort of like on many fronts, I think the lack of structure is a major challenge for people stepping from this world to that world. I think in another one that pops into my mind, I think has to do with relationships with authority figures. I think in the world of college, there's sort of like, you know, there's sort of like a polite distance, I guess. Although to be honest, you know, I've been a professor for about 16, 17 years, and that has changed. That has changed. You know, now I get emails in the middle of the night from students, and 16 years ago, that was not happening. But still, there's sort of a polite distance. In the real world, you have to start to, establish actual relationships with people in authority. Like you have to get to know them. You might have a mentoring relationship. You might network with them. You might, you know, it's just very, very different. And I think people struggle with that. So I mean, there's a range of these challenges, right? But those are a couple.
Well, I'll never forget this story. We had a young team member, and she had been on the job for about, you know, let's call it 6 months, and we hired her out of undergrad. And I said, "What's the hardest thing about the transition, Ben?" And she looked at me dead serious, Andy, and she said, "I can't take a nap in the afternoon."
There you go.
And I was like, "Ah, oh, I mean, the simple things. It's not the work, but basically what you're saying, Andy, I couldn't agree more with. And the one thing that I've seen when you talk about the structure is we have so many people waiting for direction, particularly in organizations, particularly when they're young. It's like they're looking for that task list or they're looking for that syllabus. And the things that we've seen that really start to separate people in the professional environment and the people that really move the needle for an organization are the people that aren't waiting for the task list. Certainly they're doing their job, but they're being very proactive and they're thinking outside the box. And so I hope that over time, maybe when you get into that research, that you guys can find ways in higher ed to help prepare people to be a little bit more proactive once they get into the real world.
Exactly. That's the goal. The goal is to try to understand what the sort of pain points and challenges are, and then to start to do stuff here, kind of on this side, to equip them to make the leap. So we're right there. I'm there with you.
Well, good. So obviously the book Reach has been very successful. Why Reach right now? And for someone that's not familiar with it, just give us the brief snapshot of, you know, what made you write about getting outside of your comfort zone?
So the story is that, well, first of all, I've always struggled outside my comfort zone. So that's the first thing I have to say, that, you know, I'm no sort of like expert on stepping outside my comfort zone. I'm certainly someone who's tried to do it a lot. I'm certainly someone who's struggled with it from public speaking to networking to using social media to now I'm like trying to start a little business on the side. You know, it's I've always been outside my comfort zone. I've always been stretching. So I'm not an expert, but I am attuned to the challenges. I think why now? So there are probably two answers to that question. The first is sort of just like in the world in general, I just see and notice, and it's just so obvious to me that things are changing so fast and people are having to adapt so fast, people and businesses. I gave a keynote speech a couple of months ago at a company where the CEO brought me in because he feels that stepping outside your comfort zone is essential to that culture. In fact, he said to me that, you know, the job titles that my people have now, those job titles might not exist in 2 years. You know, I want to keep these people because I'm grooming them and they're excellent people and I need to keep my human capital. But I, essential to being able for them to thrive and for our business to thrive is stepping outside your comfort zone. And then I started to realize that this is just such a key element. It's so many inflection points in our lives. You know, we talked about going from college to the real world. That's a big one. How about becoming a manager or a leader or starting a business? You know, and then in our personal lives, you know, like getting married. That's, you know, I've done that. Having kids. I mean, I think when we're at sort of transition inflection points in our lives, personal and professional, I think stepping outside your comfort zone sort of rises to the top as a critical challenge. And then the other side that brought me to this book was that my first book was Global Dexterity. I wrote that in 2013. So that's about acting outside your cultural comfort zone. And a lot of that emerges from my own experiences living and working abroad. I got such feedback from that book. This is really good feedback, and part of the feedback, frankly, was like, hey, Andy, this book is actually quite helpful, and I have never been to another culture. You know, I'm an engineer, and I now need to go into sales, and I am so stressed out about it. It's so difficult for me. And what you wrote about in this book, Global Dexterity, is really helpful for me. And that kind of put a light bulb over my head that sort of the ideas there were much more broadly applicable. And so I write for Harvard Business Review, and I wrote a kind of a trial balloon article. It was kind of around New Year's several years ago. It was like sort of like stepping outside your comfort zone, a guide for the terrified, or something along those lines. And it got a lot of feedback. It really kind of felt like it struck a chord, and kind of that's when I knew, you know, this was going to be my next project.
Yeah. Well, before we go any further, I when I read it and I think to the work that you've done around this, the question that really is the most burning thing in my mind is, why is it important that we step outside our comfort zones? I mean, I think most people have an idea, but I don't think it's too dumb of a question just to say, why is it important that people do that?
No, it's a great question, because it's not, you know, if you Google comfort zones, what you're going to find is that comfort zones get a really bad rap on the internet. You know, like life, you'll see like memes and pictures and photos. Life only begins on the edge of your comfort zone. You know, nothing ever good happened in a comfort zone, and so on and so forth. I mean, I think that's an exaggeration, and I actually think it's untrue. I think the reality is that to grow and learn and develop, it's quite important. And I think a lot of us probably do naturally do it. Some of us struggle with it, but you need to be able to step outside your comfort zone. I think there are a lot of us, me included, who used to and sometimes still avoid things outside my comfort zone, and it leads to sort of more of a narrow existence, a narrow life, fewer possibilities, you know, for growth and achievement and productivity and, frankly, happiness. I think a lot of the sort of inflection points that we talk. I'm sorry. I think a lot of the inflection points that we talked about before, when you're sort of moving from one stage to another, one challenge to another, for you to be able to succeed, I think it's essential to step outside your comfort zone. But I don't want to say that you always want to be constantly stepping outside your comfort zone, unless like you're a adrenaline junkie or something. You know, like,
right.
Like, I mean, I think we would go, we have limited sort of psychological resources and energy and so on and so forth. And I think you need to pick your spots. And I talk about that a little bit in the book too. But in general, I think that's why it's important. And you know, it's hard though. It's hard, and we can get into it, what the challenges are. And I've done a lot of work trying to kind of understand those and then have a simple, but I think comprehensive way to kind of capture them.
Well, if you just think of it in terms of, you know, meeting new people or people that are single and dating, or you look at it even from a professional environment where you have an opportunity or potential opportunity for a promotion, but you've never done it before. And the quote is escaping me, but it's something to the effect of, you know, no one ever had done the job of the promotion before. And why not you? Something to that effect. And so when you think of those steps, why is it so hard for us to step outside of our comfort zones? Because now you've kind of told us why it's important, but why is it so hard, or why do we not do it?
Yeah. So I should say that for the book, I really tried to sample broadly to answer your question. So I spoke with interviewed managers, doctors, police officers. With the police officers, I actually hung out with them for about a month, and even did a ride along one day in a police car while they performed evictions, 20 evictions actually, in a major sort of metropolitan city. Actors, students, priests, rabbis, teachers. I mean, I really even a goat farmer. I really tried to sample broadly, and also all sorts of situations, from, you know, being assertive to making small talk, to public speaking, to standing up for yourself, to speaking up in a meeting, to delivering bad news. I mean, a real range of situations to try to understand the question you asked me, which was, why is it so hard? You know, like, why is it so hard? And so what I came up with was five core sort of pain points. I call them psychological challenges. I give you a sense what they are. So the first is authenticity. The idea that, you know, remember, you're stepping outside your comfort zone. You're doing something that kind of against the grain of your habit or maybe your personality. You might feel, you very well might feel, it's very common, in fact, to feel inauthentic. This is not me. You know, I feel like an imposter. I feel, I feel like a wannabe. This is just not me. Speaking up in front of a meeting, or, you know, I spoke to a lot of young entrepreneurs who felt so inauthentic, like trying to pitch their products in front of much older, more experienced venture capitalists, like feeling like they had to put on their grown-up voice, mm-hmm. or put on a suit when they never ever wore one. But anyways, authenticity. I remember feeling the first time I was a professor, the first time I was stepping into an MBA classroom, I felt like such a wannabe. It was so weird. Like someone said, someone's like addressed me as a professor, and I like looked around behind me to see who they were speaking to. Yeah. You know, it's like it was me. But you know, so authenticity.
Well, you know, before you move on there, I think it's. I think it's a really important point, because, you know, even as a, you know, mid-30s professional that has spent, you know, years and hours upon hours studying leadership, when we go out to speak to organizations or teams about leadership, there's some of that in me, right? Where it's like, am I old enough? Are they going to be like, I already look young, right? And it's like, who's this kid talking about leadership? And I think whether it's me talking about leadership in public or it's others, I think there's a lot of people that are going to connect with that authenticity piece.
Yeah, and it's a tough one. They talk about there's a term that people often use called the imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, that I feel like an imposter in this situation. This is, you know, like I'm, people are looking at me like, who is this person to be speaking about leadership, or who mm-hmm. is this person? You know, so and that's actually connected to the second one, which is competence. The idea that so you might feel inauthentic in that role, and also stepping outside your comfort zone, you might feel inside that you're bad at this, or you're not that great at this. Mm-hmm. Remember, we're talking about something that you often might have avoided. You know, I can't do this well. And by the way, there's a public side to that, which is that I can sense, or I think that other people think that I can't do this well. So it's like a public and a private version to that one. And that is really hard. You know, like you're afraid of speaking in public, giving a speech, and you're terrified you're going to look like a fool. You know, that's a hard nut to crack. So that's the competence piece. So you got so you can feel inauthentic, you can feel incompetent. A third one, in these three, by the way, are the most common that I find: authenticity, competence. The third one is likability. The idea that people sort of worrying, will people like respect this version of me? What if they hate this version of me? You know, if I you know, if I'm sort of like a tentative type of person, and I'm never assertive in standing up for my needs, and all of a sudden I start to learn some assertiveness strategies and start to stand up for myself, are they going to hate me? You know, like that. That's kind of like the likability challenge. Will they not respect or like this version of me? And that's a tough one too. That's a real impediment anticipatorily in terms of like potentially stepping into a situation. So you got an authenticity, competence, likability. Those are the big three. I also find two others. One is resentment, the idea that you're frustrated that you have to step outside your comfort zone in the first place. I mean, logically, maybe you know when in Rome, act like the Romans, whatever situation it's in. Yep, okay, I got to do this. But psychologically, you could feel resentful that you have to do it. So a good example here is I've spoken, I think the book Reach has struck a chord with introverts. In the American workplace, in the American workplace, you know, for better or for worse, is quite an extroverted workplace, right? You know, we're standing out, speaking out, small talk, schmoozing, networking. Those are all sort of extroverted style activities. And but you know, there's a big swath of the population that's introverted that feels like deeply uncomfortable with these things. And I can't tell you how many people who've told me something along these lines, like, you know, I do excellent work. I'm a really good professional, and it frustrates me to no end. I feel so resentful that the people getting the best opportunities in my firm are the ones who can make small talk by the water cooler. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. And so that's resentment. And then the last one's morality. You don't find a lot of examples of that, but you find enough that I put it in here. And that's when stepping outside your comfort zone just feels wrong.
Yeah.
It feels, you know, it feels against my beliefs. I actually opened my book with the story of a young woman who had to fire her best friend from her startup. And she struggled with this. So you got authenticity, competence, likability is kind of the big three, and then you got resentment and morality. And if you think about it, you're not going to experience every one of these every time you step outside your comfort zone. But mm-hmm. but even one of them, you know, can hold you back.
Well, I think it's really fascinating stuff. I mean, I think everybody listening can start to put themselves in situations where those three big ones are apart, or even resentment or morality, where they haven't taken the steps to get outside their comfort zone because of those reasons. And I think, or the challenges behind it. And then certainly I think almost everybody can associate with how we avoid it, right? I mean, there's countless examples, and I know that you go through those in detail about, you know, how we avoid getting out of our comfort zone. But where I want to focus today is, how do we do it successfully? Because I think we all know how we all individually avoid it. But we all now know that we need to do it more. Good things happen when we do it more, or we learn when we do it more. How do we go get outside our comfort zone more?
Yeah, it would be like a really sad book if I stopped there, wouldn't it? I would just think that.
You would just be like, you would just be like, well, the next book's coming in a year.
Okay? Exactly. Yeah, wait on it. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I'm like totally, focused on solutions, you know, practical solutions. And that's really what the book really focuses on. That's what my training and teaching and everything focuses on. I think you need to understand kind of where the pain points are before you kind of address the solution. But in terms of solutions, I wanted to boil it down to what I felt was essential. And what I found was essential were three things. The first was conviction. Now remember this again, like, place yourself in a situation that's outside your comfort zone. Like, you're uncomfortable making small talk with strangers. You're terrified of giving a public speech. You have a really hard time breaking into meetings, whatever it might be. You know, think of your situation, and it's hard to go against the grain of your habit, of your personality. And so what I find time and time again for people is that a source of conviction is essential, sort of like a deep sense of purpose. You know, it's like an antidote to avoidance, in a sense. It doesn't doesn't erase your discomfort, but it gives you that motivation and drive and, you know, a sense of purpose to take action despite the discomfort. And, you know, your conviction can come from many places. And, you know, more and more I tend to see kind of two different types of conviction. There's professional conviction, which is sort of the idea that, you know, like, I don't feel comfortable stepping into a room and networking, you know, and even selling myself. It feels so uncomfortable. But you know what? I really want to be a manager, or I really want to be a leader, or I've always wanted to start a company, mm-hmm. you know, do my own thing, whatever it might be, whatever your professional source of conviction might be, you know, embrace it. You know, think about what it is and really embrace that, because that will give you conviction and motivation to fight through the discomfort that you have. And, you know, sometimes it's personal. You know, for me, I have to say it's often personal. So I have two kids, a 10 and 12 year old now, and I'm always, you know, I guess as a writer of a book about this topic, I'm like, you know, often trying to, you know, coax my children in reasonable ways outside their comfort zone, you know, try an activity that they might, you know, have never tried, or go into a situation where they might not know anyone, but it could be super interesting for them, you know, things like that at their level. But, and then I always like sort of put the mirror back on myself and like, I don't want to be a hypocrite and like be sort of in my parenting role saying, oh, it's important to go outside your comfort zone, but then in my own life, sort of kind of like avoiding it. So that ends up being like a tremendous source of conviction for me personally. But, you know, whatever it is, wherever your source of conviction comes from, find it, acknowledge it, embrace it. So that's tool number one. Tool number two is, I think tool number two is almost like the most sort of surprising and maybe even exciting thing that I found. And I kept seeing this like in story after story. And I should say also that I created a class at Brandeis International Business School, where I teach, several years ago, helping people to step outside their comfort zone. So I see this firsthand. They have to choose a project and so on. And so I kept seeing this, and I eventually gave a name to it. And the name I gave was customization. Personalization, customization. And the idea here is that there's no one-size-fits-all way of doing any of this. You can put your own personal tweak, your own personal spin on stepping outside your comfort zone, and that can make it more authentic for you, more natural for you, and help, you know, just sort of give you that little nudge to take a leap.
What would be an example of that? Like, I think that because it's unique, somebody listening might be like, well, what does that mean? So is there an event or a story where you've can think where someone has successfully gotten outside of their comfort zone because they made it personal or they customized it?
Absolutely. So I have tons of experience examples in the book, and also worksheets for people to work through their own. But I'll just share with you like a couple of recent stories, like post book, aren't even in the book, right? That I've like emails and stuff that I've gotten. So one I thought was really cool. This is a young woman who's very uncomfortable in social situations making small talk, but she really wants to be able to do it. I'm not talking about work situations actually here. These are personal situations. And she had this, it turns out, she's trying to figure out what can she do. And it turns out that she loves photography. She loves taking photos. She has like a blog with pictures on it. And she had just had this epiphany that she could bring a selfie stick to social gatherings. And when she started to bring, that's a prop. We could call that a prop. So she started to sort of personalize her experience of these situations by bringing a selfie stick. And it was amazing, actually. She told me like it totally changed her experience because she would have the selfie stick. People would ask her what that was. She would say, oh, it's a selfie stick. And she'd say, let me see your, you know, mobile phone. And she would put the mobile phone and show them how to do it, take a picture. Oh my God, that's so cool. Can you send that to me? Sure. What's your email? Get an email, start to build like a little relationship. It was like a absolute prop for her to catalyze conversations. Yeah. And that's one example. Just like that's a very recent example that wasn't even in the book. Another example, not in the book. A banker emailed me and he said, I read your book, loved your book. And oh my gosh, in that section on conviction, there is something that I used to do, and I never realized this, but I totally used to do this. He said, early in his career, he was terrified of public speaking, but he had to give speeches. And I guess maybe this is like specific to a banker who has a bit of money. But what he used to do is he was in Boston and he used to fly his best friend from New York up to Boston. So not that long a flight. And he would have this friend sit eighth row center while he's speaking and just like give him these nods and smiles and sort of affirmation. And that was almost like putting a prop in the audience in some ways. You know what I mean? And so that I thought that was an awesome example. And he just recently emailed me that.
Those are great stories. I think just hearing examples like that of what people are proactively doing to help them successfully get outside their comfort zone. I mean, it's just awesome.
There are tons of examples. Right. You can play with timing, nonverbal behavior, verbal behavior, props, all sorts of stuff. And I think the bottom line of customization, sort of, you know, the bumper sticker version, is you've got more power than you think you do. That's what it all boils down to.
Mm. Well, it's such interesting stuff. And I didn't want to let you go without asking this, because I think about it. And what about the word desperation? And I say that meaning when people get in desperate situations, whether it be financial or, you know, relationship, where they're getting their feet put to the fire by a spouse or by a girlfriend to change, how much does or could desperation play in helping someone really step outside their comfort zone?
Huh, that's interesting. Well, I imagine, you know, I haven't, to be perfectly honest, I haven't thought a lot about that question, but what occurs to me as you mention it is that there's probably a double-edged sword to desperation. I think desperation probably gives you a lot of fuel, right? A lot of motivation potentially. And I think motivation is really important when you're trying to step outside your comfort zone to try to overcome some of the barriers we talked about, not avoid and so on, right? So you want to have motivation. And part of conviction that we talked about earlier is trying to conjure up that source of motivation within yourself, the authentic source. I imagine, though, that there's also probably a downside of desperation too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like when you're desperate, you probably don't have a lot of patience. You probably might not have a sense of clarity about the challenges that you're facing, the ability to sort of develop a learning orientation towards what's happening. Like, in other words, when you start to step outside your comfort zone, you're probably not going to go from 0 to 60, 0 meaning you struggle with this, 60 meaning you're a master. You know, it's a stepwise process, maybe not even a stepwise, maybe 2 steps forward, 3 steps back kind of thing, right? So it's not linear in that sense. And I do think that a learning orientation and a sense of patience and so on is important when stepping outside your comfort zone, as is social support. So if desperation, you know, might mean that you don't have some of those things, which are important resources for learning to step outside your comfort zone. So I guess, you know, I hadn't thought about it a lot, but I don't know if that would probably be like the ideal situation, although right. For some people, it's the only situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just thought it'd be worth you asking. I mean, worth asking you the question. And then in your answer, you bring up this thing that gets my mind going, which is it's almost unconventional thinking, which is we're actually trying to sometimes be patient and thoughtful in order to get outside our comfort zone than like jumping all in, right? I mean, you know, my personality would be like, let's just go do it, man. Like, whatever it is. There's only one way to do it, and that's to jump in. And I've never thought of it in terms of patience, 2 steps forwards, 3 steps back. And I think that's probably an aha moment for a lot of our listeners too, which is whatever you're out there, whatever's the thing that you could do that would make a great impact on your potentially on your life or on your business or on your leadership skills, it's okay that you take your time. And I think that's really an interesting point.
Absolutely. And when you sort of fail with a small F, you know what I mean? When you have sort of like those steps back, I think it's really important to do your best to treat those as data. You know, I think a lot of people when you fail and slip up and you try to make that small talk, you try to speak up at that meeting, you try to network, you try to public speak, and it's not terrible, it's not a disaster, but maybe it doesn't meet your ideal expectations. You know, a lot of people have the tendency to sort of catastrophize and think about the absolute worst and sort of focus on that. I think the best thing to do is to think of these things as data, right? So mm-hmm. this is great. This is information, right? I can now use this information to improve. If you can sort of step back and think about it that way, I think you'll have a much better chance of succeeding. But I suspect that if you're feeling desperate, it's probably harder to do that.
Yeah,
that's my guess.
Absolutely. Well, let's end on some fun stuff. You've been so kind with your time today and sharing some just great wisdom. A couple of my favorite questions to ask. What's harder, leading at work or leading at home?
Definitely leading at home. But then again, I've got little kids.
10 and 12, that's not too little. I mean, they're getting – they know what's going on.
I suppose it all comes down to the classic sort of unhelpful answer. It depends, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the opposite of the answer we're looking for on a podcast, Andy.
I know.
As you've gone through your professional journey now, you know, 20 plus years, you've worked higher ed, you've seen some incredible people, you've been around some amazing minds. Do you think of yourself as a leader? And if you do, how do you kind of define that?
Well, it's interesting. There's sort of like so my day-to-day university life. I think I have started to become more of a leader. I've stepped into more of a leadership role, like literally, as in running an institute and being the head of various committees and so on and so forth, but also sort of being a role model for younger people and trying to pay things forward and help them in their careers, just like certain people helped me at that point in time. You know, I think that I've started to have a little bit more responsibility, not always solo responsibility. Sometimes it's shared responsibility for conceiving of a vision and then trying to create a strategy for executing on that vision. And, you know, I think that that's a lot of what leadership entails. And so I've had some sort of bits and pieces of experiences, you know, being a leader. I have to say that being an academic, though, is sort of a very solo, almost like solopreneur, as they say. You know,
yeah.
It's a super individual entrepreneurial. So you don't have a lot of chances of being like a leader in the traditional sense, unless you take the role of a dean or a president. But then I suppose in the thought leadership area, too, I've had opportunities sort of outside the university to take on, I guess, a bit of a leadership role, you know, in writing and speaking and so on. But
certainly around influence. I mean, there's no question. And if you look at John Maxwell's definition of leadership as influence, we find it to be a little too elementary sometimes. But just in that respect, I mean, you're influencing students' lives and your kids' lives and certainly the everyone that reads your books' lives. So I think without question you're a leader.
There's a sense of real responsibility too when you think about it. When you are impacting people's lives, especially with the internet and sort of the idea that you can that your impact can go wide and broad to people you have never met and will never meet.
Mm.
So, you know, it's an interesting case of leadership in today's world and sort of that. So, you know, having that sense of responsibility for the impact that you might make on people that you will never encounter. So, you know, it's sort of interesting.
It is very interesting. Where can people find out more about you? Certainly want to point people to the right place. Give us where we can send people.
Absolutely. And I really encourage it. I love, you know, connecting with people to resolve the problem we just talked about. My website, which is www.andymolinsky.com, AndyMolinsky.com. That's my website. That's sort of the hub. Got tons of articles and videos and resources and all sorts of fun stuff there. And then, of course, on social media, LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. I've got an author page on Facebook. You know, I provide an email right on my website. I love connecting with folks. And when my online courses come out, you should check those out too. Those will be out later this fall. But my website's the very best place.
Awesome, Andy. Well, we're so appreciative for you making the time and sharing such great wisdom about getting out of your comfort zone. It's my hope that if only one person decides to do something in their life to step outside their comfort zone and go past where they currently are today because this conversation was worth it. So thank you so much.
Cool. That's a great way of thinking about it. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Follow Molly podcast. It would mean a great deal to us if you would share this episode with your friends or your colleagues, anyone that you think could help develop and grow as a leader, which in my estimation is everyone. So until next time, be a good leader at home and at work.